Welcome to Greek Club. We are back in class session here at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. And we are reading the Sermon on the Mount. We're going to finish the sermon and then I think move to St. Paul. But we're in chapter 5, Matthew chapter 5. And I'm pretty sure that we are at verse 43 after our two-week break. By the way, if I could just refer to verse 42... an obscure point that I was puzzling over last when we met. I went through this rigmarole about, transitive verbs in passive becoming intransitive and then becoming transitive again, but with a slightly different meaning. And if that sounds at all familiar to you, that is, in fact, I looked it up, what happens to apostrepho, which explains why in verse 42... you can have me apostrophes, don't turn away, which is an aorist passive form, but it has a direct object, namely ton thelanta, the one who wants to borrow from you. So, I just said that to salve my own conscience. So, so having done that little task, let's move on to verse 43. A well-known paragraph, the Greek isn't too hard. So verse 43. Ekusita hati erethe, akabeses tan plezeansu, kai mzezes tan ekthransu. Maybe we'll just stop there and then we'll get the longer sentence. Easy enough, ekusata from the akuo, aorist indicative. You see the sigma of the stem and the alpha is temporally augmented to eta. So you, plural, you heard that it was said, and now we've seen that formula. This is the sixth time, form of the aorist passive of lego there, erethe. Now we have a future indicative, two of them, to be taken as imperatives. In the second person, this is very common in Greek, so you could translate either you will love your neighbor, or you could just translate love imperatively. And hate your enemy. Plezeon is actually an interesting word. It's I think it's originally an adverb that means nearby, but and it doesn't decline. So you see it here. It looks like it's a nice accusative form. Yeah, it doesn't decline. Yeah, our Hebraist here is happy that that happens. Here it looks easy enough, but you could see, for instance, to plezeon with the dative article, they would look the same. And it comes to mean neighbor, the nearby one. So that's pretty easy, right? A couple of independent clauses linked with chi. Questions about verse 43? Anything at all? Like, why did God make us learn Greek? Or?
This has maybe come up already, but why does he use the aorist and not the perfect? In English, we would say, you have heard.
Right. Well, the Greek aorist can... that's a good question, actually, Tom. It can refer to past action at an indefinite time. You heard sometime in the past. Now, the trick is the English perfect can do the same thing. So... in English perfect, when we say you have heard, we don't necessarily mean to imply that you're not hearing it anymore, although we can. And so actually there's a paragraph in Burton's grammar on moods and tenses in which he has a long explanation of how it's relatively common for a Greek aorist indicative to be rendered by an English perfect indicative. Yep. And it's just about past action in indefinite time. It just happened back then, and in English. So it's really a target language question. Right. So, good. Anything else? Verse 43. Everybody have a good Christmas. Now we're in the Epiphany season. Light has dawned. Right. People have sat in darkness, which does not refer to Greek Club on the third floor. Right. Okay. We'll get the next two verses are a sentence. And again, we've seen this before. Ego de lego himin, agapata tus ekthrus himon, kai prosiukas de. Hyperton diakonton hemas. Hapos genestha huioi tu patras humon tu en uranois, hati tan helion atu anatele, epi panerus kai agathus, kai brehe, epi decaius kai adecus. But I, emphatic, say to you, and now we have from the our friend agapao, agapata could be an indicative, right? The vowel contraction works the same, but here it's taken as an imperative, you plural, present stem, so maybe some emphasis, indeed love, or really love, or keep on loving. Again, I'm not always sure how to nuance the present stem verb forms, and so sometimes I just don't, but it's always good to notice it, right? So maybe indeed love the enemies of you all, and pros eukesta, you can see the middle passive ending, but just relax, it's deponent, right? Pros eukomai, so pray, present imperative, middle deponent, pray on behalf of. And now we have a substantized participle from dioko, which means to pursue. And it can be pursue in a good way or pursue in a bad way. Right? Is it radaf in Hebrew? Right. Surely goodness and mercy will pursue me. Mm-hmm. Is that, am I making that up?
I don't remember if that's in the text.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So here, obviously in a negative context, because it's parallel with enemies. So it translates on behalf of those who are persecuting you, plural. And now we have a hupos clause, which probably expresses purpose, and an unusual form of, or an unusual meaning of ginomai. See, in context, it can't mean become, because throughout the sermon, the disciples of Jesus are already the sons of the Heavenly Father. See? That's why he calls him your Heavenly Father. See? So here, it is a puzzle. Everybody notices it. So it must have to mean something like, show that you are. So pray for those who persecute you, so that, in order that you may show that you, plural, are, and now we have the predicate nominative, sons of the Father of you, the one in the heavens. Which again is one of Matthew's typical ways of referring to the Father. And then he explains why that's the case. By the way, genesta, just because it's in a hupos clause, you would know that it's a subjunctive from ginomai. Eta is the long connecting vowel there. So do that in order that you may show that you are sons of your Father who is in heaven. Why? Because now we have two verbs, anatello, which means to raise up something. To cause something to rise. And breho means to rain upon, R-A-I-N. Okay? He makes to rise the son of him, his son, as in S-U-N, right, upon bad people and good people. The adjectives there, panerus and agathus, are acting like nouns. Notice that they don't have to have an article to do that, right? And he rains, he makes rain to fall, that's a breche, just a present indicative, upon righteous people and unrighteous people. And so bad and good, righteous and unrighteous, here probably simply, it's kind of like believer and unbeliever, you know? For instance, Joseph in Matthew 1 is called a dikaios, he's called a righteous guy, which just means he's a pious believer, right? And the Old Testament talks this way a lot. So, yeah, please, Kevi.
What's the root for the word brekai?
It's just breko, believe it or not. That's the verb. It looks up in the dictionary.
How is it spelled?
B-R-E-X-O. Oops, wait a minute. I mean beta, rho, epsilon, chi, omega.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Sorry about that. I'm a little rusty coming off the break. Yeah. If you want a mnemonic device, by the way, I think of brek shampoo. And I think of somebody in the shower. See, I have as many stupid mnemonic devices as you do. Right? So breko, so I think of this person in the shower and the rain. So anyway, let's move on from that. So, I mean, it probably occurs like twice in the New Testament, so it's not one of your big vocab words. Will?
Who did you say that the Bible was called righteous? Who is
it? It means believer. Oh, Joseph.
Joseph?
Yeah, in Matthew 1. Yeah, it's because he's a righteous, he's a dikaios, and he doesn't want to publicly disgrace Mary. Right. Right. So good. So again, not too hard. Maybe look up a few vocab words and remember that hapos expresses purpose, and you're good to go. Good. Anything else on 44 and 45? Greek's not too bad. In fact, it's inspired. Verse 46. We'll take 46. Eangar agapeseta tus agapontas humas tina misthon ekata uhekai hoi telonai ta auto poiusin. We have a conditional clause. We call this a present general conditional sentence. That would be using the nomenclature used by many and also by Dr. Vells. So we have aeon plus the subjunctive. Agapeseta, this is the aorist subjunctive. The agapes is the stem, long connecting vowel. For if you love tus agapontas. Now it's a present stem participle. So those who typically love you, maybe? If you want to give even a little sharper edge to what Jesus is saying here. And then to give an idiomatic translation for tina misthon ekata, big hairy deal, right? Or maybe we might a little more precisely say, what reward do you have? Okay, so the verb is ekata and misthon is the direct object. And tina is the interrogative pronoun. You can tell because it has an acute accent. The only difference between this form and the indefinite pronoun, someone, a certain one, a certain thing, is the placement of the accent. The interrogative on this form would have an accent on the second syllable, or on the last syllable, on the ultima. So, and I know that because I'm over 6 feet tall and I teach elementary Greek. For if you love those who go on loving you, what reward do you have? And then we ask a question with a form of u. Here we have uki, and so the expected answer is yes. Even the tax collectors do the same thing, don't they? Even Tony Soprano is nice to his grandkids. And he's a murderous thug. Is that right? Is Tony Soprano a murderous thug? I never watched The Sopranos. I like to skip entire technologies and to keep out of touch that way, and that way I can't be asked to do much. So, Kai, even the tax collectors do ta'auta, the same thing, don't they? I mean, that's how you would translate it. And the answer is, yes, they do. Right? So this is not impressive if you love the people who typically love you. It doesn't impress anybody. By the way, we have ta'auta. Remember that the third person pronoun, personal pronoun, autas, aute, auta, when it's in attributive position, as here, you've got the article, it means the same. Right. It's a little bit of an idiom, and so it's hard to get used to that until you get it in your cerebellum or wherever that knowledge lies. Okay, good. Questions on 46. So we have a question expecting the positive answer. And then, great, verse 47. Kai ean aspaseista tus adolfus human manan tit perisun poeta. Uhikai hoi ethnikoi ta ata poyusin. So, now we have another present general conditional sentence. If you greet aspadzomai is the dictionary form, its deponent. So this is, you can see the zeta of the original stem has gone to sigma. So you've got a weak aorist form. And so this is an aorist subjunctive middle deponent. Second person plural. If you all greet the brothers of you only, manan is accusative singular, so it's acting like an adverb. Now we have the interrogative again. Te, what more abundant thing are you doing? And the implied answer is actually made explicit in the next clause. Let's see. Maybe, and we'll do that. So another question expects yes. Even the Gentiles do the same thing, don't they? The answer is yes, they do. Right. So nothing special about sort of natural human loves. It just believers are about to be called to exhibiting something quite extraordinary. Yeah, Will, go ahead.
What is the nuance of that?
It's kind of a whenever something happens. Whenever this happens, this happens. Right.
Like pretty much every time this happens.
Yep. You can't, when you learn Greek, you learn these careful categories of conditional sentences, you know. There is some overlap. Sometimes you'll get aeon plus a subjunctive and then like a past time indicative or something. And so you can't, and language is flexible, and right. So they don't always, Greek doesn't always follow its own rules.
They'd also call this third class, is that right?
I think this is also called a third class conditional sentence, right?
Just some people call it this, some people call it that.
Yep. I think the debate goes back into the 19th century, actually on the nomenclature, oddly enough. So we can blame a lot on the 19th century, yeah. So that's good.
The war.
That's right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Lots of stuff. Okay, good. Other questions about verse 47? Again, very similar in structure to verse 46. And again, familiar material. So it helps when you know what it's supposed to say. So, all right, verse 48. We'll finish off this chapter and get into chapter 6. Esista un, Jesus says. Esista un humes teleoi. Hos ha pater humon ha uraneos teleos estin. So esista is the deponent future indicative of eime, the linking verb, and it's second plural. You can see the ste ending. So, again, you could translate, I suppose, you will be, therefore, or you could just translate it, therefore, you, emphatic pronoun, doesn't have to be there, you be teleos, complete, mature, fully formed, having reached the goal. Hos ha pater humon, as your father, the heavenly one, is teleos. By the way, before everybody gets drowned in guilt and inadequacy, remember that chapter 5 begins with, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the reign of heaven. Okay. In terms of morphology, who can explain to me why teleos, the second word from the end, has two accents? Other than a typographical error, right?
Essence and clip.
Yes, thank you. You win. I mean, if I had a beer right now, I would buy it and give it to you.
I have an animal cracker.
An animal cracker. Okay, that's good. Give the man an animal cracker. Yeah, this form of the linking verb. In fact, 5 of the 6, I think the only present indicative form of eme that actually has an accent in its own right is the second singular, a, epsilon iota, has a circumflex and a smooth breathing mark. All the other forms are what's called enclitic, and that's from the Greek verb enklino, which means to lean on. And they're actually, for their accent, they're leaning on the word in front of them. Right? And so you don't know if I just made that up or not. I think it's actually true, actually. Yeah. So that's why teleos has a second accent, because the accent on the antepenult is too far away to help out estin. And so you actually have to put another accent on it. And and sad to say, it doesn't get any better than that. So okay. So it's we got one more minute, and we're going to just charge right into chapter 6, and that way we'll say we read in 2 chapters. Hokey smokers, we'll do the first half of it. Pros ekatete tein dikaiousinein humon me poiein emprestenton anthropon pros tathe athenai autois. So pros echo means to stay away from or to watch out for. Okay, so watch out, now go to the end of the line, not to do. See, that's the object of the verb. The infinitive is the object. Watch out not to do, now back up, the righteousness of you in the presence of people. Now we have pros ta plus the infinitive, which often expresses what?
Purpose.
About Jesus is addressing here motive, right? In order to be visible to them. Theathenai as from theao mai, its deponent, and so the aorist passive infinitive has an active meaning, in order to be visible to them. So be sure not to put up, I'm going to make a little trouble here, be sure not to put up any memorial plaques.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know. I'm trading. I'm happy to say I'm here up in the third floor and I'm safe. So that sentence is easy enough and is a good place to start. And stop, I mean, and we'll clean up next week if we need to. Let's see. I'll be actually gone Tuesday, so I'll get some other New Testament guy to come do Greek Club.
Yeah.
Or else I'll get Professor Eggert. He could do it too. So.
That'd be
Yeah, it would be fun.